Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Kicking off the heat, yeah, it's time to go. Slapping me, community show. Tuesday nights, we bring it on air. Step into the ring if you're ready to care.
What is good, everybody? It is your boy, We Too Deep, and we are back with another episode of the Slapping Meat Community Show. And we have a good one for you today. Again, we got some wrestling, some pro football. We got questions from the Discord. Y'all know how it is if you have been here before, if you are an OG and you're just continuing to follow through in listening to this podcast, I appreciate you. If you are brand new here, welcome to what I would consider one of the better podcasts. I'm a little biased. One of the better podcasts out there in this genre that's trying to accomplish, you know, sort of what I'm doing, and bringing communities together consistently. You know, we don't have the biggest community, right? But the community we have is strong. It's, it's a friendship, and that's what I look to build. I'm not looking for numbers necessarily. Numbers would be great. 100% would be great. But anyway, if you're new here, or if you're returning, I do appreciate you all giving this episode a listen, no matter where in the world you are listening from. I welcome you and I thank you for listening. With that being said, I have some things to ask of you all. The first is, if you're listening to the audio on Spotify, Amazon Music, Apple Music, or Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, you know, on a podcast service, if you're listening that way, if you could subscribe there, follow, or whatever the method is, leave a review and share that link with your friends. That's how we grow the listener base. If you're listening to this via the YouTube channel, which is still just audio only, but it is on YouTube as well, if you're listening that way, like, share, subscribe, leave a comment. That's how we get in the algorithms that way. Unfortunately, with the way the internet works now, you don't necessarily get out there if you're not in the algorithm. And these algorithms, you know, essentially go by, you know, it's different for every platform, but essentially it all sort of works the same. You need interaction with the episode, not just listens, but you need engagements with the episode to show that not only are people listening, but people are engaging with the content, and that shows that it's something that maybe other people would like to engage in. And so if you guys could just leave a like on the YouTube channel, if that's how you're listening, leave a comment wherever you're listening from, show some engagement in the show, that would be perfect. 100%, that's how we grow the show. So that's all I got to ask out of you. Let me give you what you came here for. And we'll start that first by going in the ropes. And that is our wrestling-related conversation. just two things to talk about this week. I know last week's episode was a long one, and in the rope segment in particular took up a large segment of that episode, and I want to just make address to it that if you listened to that episode and all you got out of that hour-long segment was don't listen to Junkyard James because he's an idiot, which, by the way, are not words that I ever said, if that's what you got out of it, you got the wrong thing out of that segment. That segment, 100%, I don't know how many times I affirmed it in that episode, in that segment, hey, he's allowed to have his opinion, but here's why I believe his opinion is wrong. That's all that segment was. I wasn't saying don't listen to him. If you agree that there needs to be a union in wrestling, that's your prerogative. All that segment was saying, though, is here are questions that I have that I don't think anyone who ever promotes a union ever thinks about, and we need answers to these, right? And so I mentioned this, of course, because he gets on his episode Friday, and with him and Cody, and that's essentially what he said that I said. And that's not at all what I said. So I do want to clarify that. And of course, I know my listeners who listen to the podcast and listen to it with, you know, eyes and ears that aren't trying to be victimized. Because that's what I think he assumed that I replied for, was to make him to victimize him. Right? That's not at all what I wanted to do. What I wanted to do was to say, hey, let's have this conversation. Here are questions that I have. Rather than actually answering those questions like he had the opportunity to do on his episode with him and Cody this week, he just basically dismissed it all as, well, he was saying, don't listen to me because I'm an idiot. And that's not what I said in that segment last week. So just that's that first clarification. Now let's get into this week's episode. The first thing that I want to talk about is I saw, and I don't think I have it saved. I wish I saved the post. I wish I would have screenshotted it. Let me double check. I should have checked this before I stored it. Let me double check. I don't think I have it saved. I don't think I do. Yeah, I highly doubt I saved this. Yeah, anyway, so what it is here it is. Actually, I do have it right here. Former NXT talent Danny Palmer has gone off on Mandy Rose for doing OnlyFans, and here are the comments. Here's the quote. Doing OnlyFans is not women's empowerment. It's sick, twisted, and evil. OnlyFans is marketed as women taking control of their bodies, but when you look closer, it's not empowerment at all. It is a trap. It's slavery. Slavery to attention, to validation, to feeling like you're enough. True freedom doesn't come from selling pieces of yourself to the highest bidders. Our bodies aren't just ours to do whatever we want with. They are a gift from God, and they're meant to honor Him. So to my friend, Mandy Rose, by the way, you know who you are. You have my number. Your decisions to do OnlyFans is not only hurting you, but also hurting men. And so I want to talk about this, not necessarily because I think it's important to the wrestling discussion. Both of these women no longer are actively wrestling, Mandy Rose nor Danny Palmer. I think Danny Palmer either is looking for bookings or is done with wrestling. I don't fully know. I think she's actually, you know, maybe she's injured. I don't know what her situation is. But this is something that, for the longest time, and probably 2-3 years now, I have been very anti-OnlyFans, and I've been very anti-OnlyFans on this podcast, right? And for the most part, the response to me being anti-OnlyFans is, well, you know, there's a couple different responses. The first is, well, you know, OnlyFans isn't just for sex work. To which I would reply, of course, absolutely. In fact, it was started to have fans be able to subscribe to bands that are underground, and it started in the UK because their music scene is very different than the American music scene in terms of, you know, in America, if you want to make it in America, you go to, you know, in country music, if you want to make it in country music, right, you go to Nashville. And you play on Broadway in Nashville until you get signed. Eventually, a record executive will walk past you and maybe will like your stuff, right? Or, you know, if you want to get into hip-hop, maybe you go to, you know, you send in demos depending on, like, your style. Maybe you send it to T.I. in Atlanta or Jay-Z in New York, right? If you want to get into, like, rock and roll or whatever, right, you would go to Hollywood. And you would go to these cities and you would play on the streets, right? In the UK, I imagine it's not that easy because they don't have a lot of major record labels in Europe. And so in the European scene, that's essentially what OnlyFans was started to be was the place where the UK music scene could they have their fan base. You could subscribe, you can get content that way without the need of a record label. What happened, however, is come 2020, OnlyFans, because of their lack of regulation on what was on the site in comparison to maybe in their competitor, Patreon, who is super, you know, there's a lot of regulations on what can and cannot go and can and cannot be said on a platform like Patreon. It's super restrictive, right? Well, when COVID hit and a lot of people, you know, were losing their job, a lot of people, adult actresses, a lot of women who need, you know, realize that if I'm attractive enough, I can make a quick buck. And so OnlyFans became known for and synonymous for sex work. And unfortunately for the company and the founder of OnlyFans and the company itself, perception is reality. So whether or not the website is only for sex work, which we all know it isn't, but a vast majority of the high-earning accounts are, and I'm willing to bet 90, and I'm even willing to go up to 100% of the top 100 earning accounts on OnlyFans are sex work accounts, adult actresses of some way, shape, or form, mostly probably women. And so perception is reality. And so the second response will then become, well, it's okay to be sexy. Why? Like, I'm not hating on sexiness. And guess what? I'm not hating on it either. 100% agree it is okay to be sexy. Within boundaries. Especially if you're someone like Mandy Rose, who is, you know, has a man. I don't know if they're married yet. But, like, you should want your body to only be seen by your significant other. I don't think there's anything glorifying about what these women do. And so for someone like Danny Palmer, because especially in the wrestling business, the response is, because wrestling fan or wrestlers, especially female wrestlers, realize, well, COVID's shutting down indie shows. We need a way to make money. And so they started producing content, and none of it was necessarily nudity. And we'll just be clear, a lot of it was not nudity, but a lot of it was just their standard, you know, photo shoots or selling merchandise. Or a lot of the big money comes from the private messaging, where like it's pay per message, or you have to pay for the higher tier subscriptions to be able to DM or whatever, right? And that, and even if you're not, you know, you're talking to a robot or whatever, because that's honestly what happens, right? 99% of the time, I'm willing to bet it's either AI who handles it, or I don't think it gets real in depth. Depends on the wrestler, I would assume, right? But so the response was, "You go, girl, get your salary, go get your bag, girl." And Danny Palmer finally is one of the first ones I've seen step out and say, "You're better than this." Because to me, it's not a money thing. Danny Palmer, explained it 100% the way that I would have explained it. She took the faults in my head and said it. And I think in this industry, when a man says, if I would have come out and said on the podcast, "Doing OnlyFans is sick, twisted, evil. OnlyFans is marketed as women's taking control of their bodies, but it's actually it's not empowerment, it's a trap, it's slavery." If I would have come out and said OnlyFans is slavery, you would say, "Well, you're just a man, you don't understand, you hate women, you're a misogynist," right? But for a woman to come out and say it, I think it holds some standards. She's not wrong. She's not wrong. The women who post this stuff, they crave attention. They need affirmation, right? They're searching for something. They're searching for something. I don't believe that they can find through the type of sexual relationships that OnlyFans creates. They need validation. They crave validation. And to them, validation is monetary. If I can get money to do this, that validates my existence. That's how a lot of them think. Or how I would imagine a lot of them think. But it's slavery. Right? There's a feeling for a lot of these girls. Let's move outside of wrestling, because I think a lot of wrestlers get into it because it is a quick way to make a buck. And a lot of them, I don't think, are doing the uber sexual stuff. Mandy Rose is, though. Right? I've seen some leaks from her OnlyFans. I don't have enough money to. If I had the type of money Mandy Rose charges for her OnlyFans, I would have ESPN Premium and Netflix to watch what I actually care about, which is pro wrestling. Right? I don't care about that. Right? I'm not going to waste money on that. Right? It leaks all the time. People leak her stuff all the time. I've seen some of the leaks from her account. And she gets into some pretty nude scenes and some content that is pretty graphic. I don't want to say it's full-blown, like, actual sex acts, because I don't know for certain, but I'm willing to bet maybe there is. And so, I don't think she's wrong. I don't think Danny Palmer is wrong, excuse me, in saying that. There's a need. I think the women who are in the industry of adult entertainment, there's a need for validation that sort of gets distorted to say, well, you can be validated if you make more money, and you can make a lot of money by selling your body. But it's slavery. It's literally slavery. Right? If we cast it this with in the 1600s in the South, it's slavery. It's sex slavery. It's no different. It's women selling themselves. The difference is there's the illusion. There's the illusion that they have empowerment over their bodies. But you don't. You don't. Dani Palmer's not wrong here. She's just not. Right? And so I wanted to mention that. I think it's interesting. I haven't seen any fallout, but then again, I don't necessarily try to stay on in the IWC side of social media. But I'm wondering what people feel about that issue and what Dani Palmer said. The second thing I want to talk about is Halloween Havoc. Considering that I completely forgot about doing the predictions last week, let's talk about what we saw Saturday night. So a couple big things. Y'all know me, when I do results, I don't sit here and talk about at length with pages of notes. We start with Javon Evans and Leon Slater versus Mr. Iguana and La Barca. This was a fun little match to start the show. Javon and Slater pick up the win. Apparently, the backstage segment, they might be going after the NXT Tag Team Championships, which is very interesting. Ethan Page versus El Hijo del Dr. Wagner Jr. For the North American Championship. Ethan Page retains. This, to me, was my favorite match of the night. Ethan Page might be the best wrestler on the planet right now. Just the best character, the best gimmick work, the best, you know, on-screen presence. It's just night and day different what they're doing with what he's doing in NXT versus what he did in AEW. And this almost sort of reminds me of Ethan Page from TNA, who I thought him and Josh Alexander could have argued to be the best tag team on the planet at that time. But I love Ethan Page, bro. Next match is Blake Monroe versus Zaria, who is defending the title for Sol Ruka because Sol Ruka was injured. Blake Monroe ends up winning. She's the new Women's North American Championship. I think this was the best way to do this. You know, you can then start the turn of Zaria and Sol Ruka, and they're falling apart. Sol Ruka's probably going main roster when she gets healthy. A really good match. Blake Monroe now is champion. She can be featured a little bit more They're really taking their time with Blake Monroe, right? She comes in, she has the big feud with Jordynne Grace to sort of start her tenure. Now she's moving on. She's now feuding with Sol Ruka, which now ends her beating Zaria to become champion. And now you could see her as champion of the mid-card. Now you can see what she really has going for her, and it's just a slow burn. Rather than what Tony Khan did when Mariah May showed up, right? Tony Khan took her and immediately put her in the top feud in the company by having her feud with Tony Storm, who for the big belt, and it took a couple months. And she had Mina, and there was the love triangle and all of that stuff. And they had one giant feud, and then you had the payoff match, and she left because there was nothing left to do. There was nothing left for her to do after winning the title, being in the biggest storyline in the company. There was nothing left for her to do. She had reached the pinnacle because Tony immediately threw her to the top of the mountain. What are they doing with her in NXT? They're slowly building her so that there's a that you don't use all the steam to get her to the top And now there's nothing left for her to do, right? Match four, Tatum Paxley against JC Jane for the NXT Women's Championship, where Mommy Tatum, real mommy, the real mommy, the real goth mommy of the of WWE, Tatum Paxley, can now claim to be a champion in NXT as NXT Women's Champion. And my takeaway from this match is I don't ever want to hear from anyone ever again that the Performance Center does not work. That a slow build, that going through the PC and actually being trained, I don't want to ever hear that WWE doesn't produce talent, that they don't make talent, that the PC doesn't work, that there's a section of the fan base that believes that. Fully forgetting, now we got Tatum, now you got Oba, who was once champion. Javon Evans is being trained through that system in the PC, right? Slow burn with him. Trick Williams came through the PC. You know, I'm willing to bet 50 to 60% of the main roster, you know, came through the PC. Charlotte, Alexa, Becky. Well, they weren't trained, but guys, they came through the PC. The PC is there is to develop. When I say developmental, I mean it develops talent into the WWE style. So DIY, Gargano, Ciampa, right? They came from a pure indie background, became developmental talent in the PC through NXT. Now they know the WWE system. So DIY. I'm willing to bet about 60% of the main roster, the PC helped train. And I've only named a few: Raquel, Rhea, Liv, Carmella. There's so many people that the PC helped train. I don't ever want to hear that it doesn't work. I just don't. Match 5, Dark State wins back the NXT Tag Team Champions from the Hardys. I misunderstood what this match was. I thought this was going to be on the compound, and it was going to be cinematic. I was really looking forward to this match until it started, and it wasn't cinematic. This was just essentially an ODQ match. That's a good match, but I was a little disappointed because it was my fault. I misunderstood what it was. And then Ricky Sainz defeats Trick Williams. I'll say this. Really good show. Really good Halloween Havoc. I'll say this. I'm a little bit disappointed we didn't have the next challenger, you know, the cliffhanger. It appears to me the big thing that they're teasing is Izzy Dame turning on Tatum. We know that's going to happen. We kind of expected it. I wish that someone would have come out. So here's how I would have ended the show, right? Ricky Sainz is holding the title. We panned backstage where Tatum does this thing, and you could see Izzy looking like she's getting ready to turn. And then you go back to the ring, and Ricky Sainz is still holding the belt, still celebrating. And then I would have had, like, the lights go out and his next opponent come out. Or at least have the music play, right? I really would have wished that we ended with that as the cliffhanger, for me personally. All right, so we went in the ropes. Let's go forth and deep. Talk about week 8, which was an interesting week for sure. The first thing I want to talk about is thoughts and prayers to Cam Scataboo. What an awful injury that was. We started week 8 with a blowout where the Chargers blew out the Vikings. The Jets finally got a win. The Dolphins figuring out how to play football. The Bills blew out the Panthers. We'll talk about that game in a minute because I want to talk about the Bills. The Eagles got their get back against the Giants. The Patriots, you know, struggled early. We'll talk about them in a minute. The Chiefs beat the Commanders to go to 5-1. Excuse me, 5-3. I can't read, apparently. It was a standard week. It was kind of what you expected when you looked at the games on paper. So let's talk, though, about the Bills. Because this is the big thing I see in the NFL right now. Is I see a lot of Bills fans on social media chirp, 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 chirping. Oh, we took over the Panther Stadium. Guys, I need you to understand, as someone who lives in the area of the Carolina Panthers, I need you to understand. Charlotte is probably, I'm willing to guess, in the top 10, if not the top 5, largest growing transplant cities. Meaning, by transplant, I mean there's more population of people not born in the city, the native Charlatans, that there's more people from outside who was not born in Charlotte, not born in North Carolina. There's more people not born in the state or in the city than people born in the city in Charlotte right now. I also need you to understand that for the native Charlotte fans who have been here longer than the franchise, which was, what, 93, I think, was its first year? Something like that. Maybe 90s. So somewhere in the early, mid to late 90s, right? For most of the fans in the area, your choices for most of your life would have been the Redskins or the Falcons, right? There's not a lot of native Panther fans. There's not a lot of Panther fans. Let's just be honest. The team hasn't done much in its existence. You've had probably 4 good years in your entire existence. You've been to 2 Super Bowls, which is decent. But you haven't really given the city, a city that's 50 to 60% transplant. And the demographic, they don't necessarily care about football. I'm just going to be honest with you. There's not a lot of talk about football in this city, right? It's not a surprise, right? And a big majority of these transplants are coming from Western New York. And the Bills fans are just loud and obnoxious. And I've said this before, loud and obnoxious, loud and passionate doesn't make you a good fan base. It actually makes you quite annoying, right? I've seen more Cowboys fans here than Panther fans. I've seen more, just to give you an understanding, right? And so it's not surprising that the Bills took over Bank of America Stadium, because I'm willing to bet 20 to 30% of the city's population came from Western New York and were Bills fans. It's not a surprise. Here's where I laugh at this, though. The season ticket holders who sold all the tickets to the Bills fans, essentially, sell them at 3 times the original purchase price. Y'all got scalped for your money. You made Christmas very, very good for the children of those who own the season tickets, because a lot of people who own season tickets for the Panthers end up selling the tickets to the home games. Most of them don't go to the home games. It just doesn't happen. But here's my... And then they sit here and I'm like, oh my, we blew out the... Guys, you blew out Andy Dalton, who looked like he hadn't played football ever under center. And a coach that, I guess, decided, hey, we're not going to play our best player in Rico Dowdle. Because he's their best player on offense outside of Bryce Young. Right? It just makes no sense to me. The Bills aren't good, right? The Bills aren't good. They're just not. Now, on the other hand, let's go to Patriot Corner. Let's take it up to Foxborough for a second. And we struggled. I was really, really concerned with the beginning of this game. I really was. We struggled pretty early in the game. That second half, though, Drake May showed up, bro. Stephon Diggs gets his first touchdown of the season as a Patriot fan. As a Patriot, he gets his first touchdown. Henderson, Travion Henderson, showed out for the first time in the regular season. Mac Hollins was our leading receiver. We struggle with sacks. Myles Garrett had 5 sacks. That's scary. The Patriots had very few. Our leading sack getter was 1. I'm assuming that's probably our only sack. But here's the thing that is absolutely crazy to me. We controlled time of possession, 36 minutes, 12 seconds to 23:48. We had 422 total yards compared to their 213. We've cleaned up the penalties a little bit. 7 for 54 is still kind of a lot. We got to do better in the red zone. 2 for 6 is not acceptable to me. But like, so there's room for improvement for the Patriots. But we're sitting here, 6-2, second place in the AFC. Drake May's having an MVP caliber season, and this team is, you know. They have the Falcons, I think, this week. So, yeah, we got the Falcons this week. Then we go to play the Buccaneers next week, which I think could be a trap game that we end up losing. I do. I'll be realistic. We got to go to Tampa. Realistically, we probably won't win that game. All right, but then we got the Jets, the Bengals, the Giants on Monday night, bye week, right? So in the next four games, Falcons, Bucks, Jets, Bengals, realistically, that's 3-1. And then you add the Giants, which I think it's a trap game. We're at home. It's Monday night. I think we'll win. So realistically, over the next 5 weeks before the bye week, we could go 5-1, end up 11-3 going into the bye week to end on a four-game, basically, season to end the season, the last 4 games, being the Bills at home in New England, going to the Ravens, going to the Jets, and then playing at home against the Dolphins. So I realistically think there's only 1 more loss on the schedule. Maybe 2. I've always said Buccaneers or Bills realistically are 2 losses. Let's say it's 2 losses realistically left in the season, that's 13-4. That's 13-4. I think realistically we could be 13-4. And so the Patriots are looking, you know, and I keep seeing, oh, these Patriots fans are so lucky they only had the, you know, there's preschoolers who, you know, they make jokes, there's preschoolers who hadn't seen them win a Super Bowl. And then they start calling, guys, we can't help it. We run our team better than your franchise. Like I don't feel bad for Browns fans or Vikings fans or Lions fans who don't know what championships taste like. I don't feel bad for Cowboys fans whose owner doesn't know how to operate a team for 30 years straight. Apparently, like, you did very well in the 90s, but like, apparently that magic ran out when you couldn't buy championships because, you know, the salary cap took over and Jerry Jones isn't good with salary cap, it apparently appears. But you see what I'm saying, right? So I just, I'm excited for the rest of the year. I think we're definitely a playoff team. Here's what's going to happen with this fourth and deep segment, though. We're going to get rid of the deep five for 2 reasons. One, I just don't want to do it anymore. That's the main reason. But 2, there really wasn't any objectification to how, there was no objective way to rate it. And so for me, it just wasn't worth trying to come up with explanations other than, well, they scored the most points, right? Because I don't sit there and watch all the games every week. And so I don't think it's necessarily fair to say this, that, and the third. What I will say is next week we will have a trade deadline discussion, because next week, next Tuesday, is the trade deadline. I think it's 4 p.m. Eastern time next Tuesday, the 4th. Is when all trades need to be into the league. Speaking of trades, my Patriots have made two this week so far. Today, within 20 minutes before I started recording, we were trading with everyone. We traded, Keon White, pass rusher, to the San Francisco 49ers. We traded Keon White to the Niners. We traded Kyle Duggar to the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think we end up, after all the trades, a couple seventh rounds I think we gave away, and we got 2 6th rounds, it looked like, for later in this year's draft. These are not surprise trades to me. I knew both of these players would be moved by the deadline. Kind of sucks. I like Kyle Duggar, but he doesn't fit this defensive system, so it's... And here's the thing. I wish DeBrill Peppers was still there, because he's really good. But Jalen Hawkins is playing fantastic football. We struggle on the other end with the other safety, and I wish maybe we can go get someone like Jesse Bates to fill in that role. I think Martin Mapu plays there some a little bit. Here's the thing. I don't want a lot of moves after these two for the Patriots. I knew these two would happen, and I know a lot of Patriots fans are like, well, we need a Lave, or we need... A.J. Brown or a receiver of that caliber, and I actually don't agree. I think the Patriots are in very good shape with their offensive roster right now. We're cooking. Why mess? If the ingredients are working, why would you add something else to it? Right? And so I think we need to stay put where we are. We got a team that's moving, and we got rid of the two players that were sort of talked about being moved, and so I think we stay where we are. And we continue playing football the way the Patriots have been playing football this year. That's sort of how I look at this season. So there's that. So let's go into the questions from the Discord. Longer episode last week. It's going to be a little bit shorter than normal, probably. It depends on how long these questions take. We really only have three questions, which is fine. That gives me time. One of them I'm going to have to dig very deep into to answer the question. So that's going to be probably 20, 30 minutes, just for you to know. And we'll end with that question. So let's start with B-Master's two questions, and then we'll get to Kara's at the very end. So the first one, you're stranded on a beach, and you come across a magic box that could play any song you want. The catch is you have to listen to that one song forever. Essentially, the question is, what is that song that you would pick to listen to forever if you're stuck on an island? Haven't given this question much thought, to be honest with you. Here's the thing with this question, right? I think if you ask most people who listen to music and are like music junkies, they have that one song, right, that no matter what, they know what it's going to be, right? It's their favorite song. I don't have favorites when it comes to movies or entertainment in that aspect, right? For example, like anytime I mention I'm a wrestling fan, almost always the first question I get from non-wrestling fans, even from wrestling fans, is who's your favorite wrestler? And I don't have one. I have favorites that I cheer for, but I don't have a favorite that's like the go-to answer. Especially since a lot of times when people ask me that, they don't know a lot of the newer wrestlers, right? Because I probably, if you were to ask me that question, more than likely it's either Sol Ruka or Stephanie Vaquer that would be the answer. But if you're not currently watching the product, you're not going to know who those two people are. And so I don't have a favorite, right? So with music, I'm kind of the same way. I have a favorite artist. I don't have a favorite song of his. His name's Randall King. He's a country artist. I don't have a favorite song. And I'll be honest, probably wouldn't listen to a lot of his music because his music is a little bit more old school, sad, honky tonk type music. Get you on the dance floor, slow dance type music. And so I probably wouldn't want to listen to that for the rest of my life. I don't actually know if there's a song that I would want to listen to forever. Where I wouldn't yeet the magic box into the ocean and tell it to stop playing. But if I had to make a pick, I don't know. See, these type of questions are really difficult because now you're asking me to play favorites in a subject that I really don't care enough about to play favorites. And now I got to think about music that I like. Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know. That's going to be my answer, is I don't know. I don't think I have a song that I would pick in this situation. Like, here's how the situation would play out, right? I'm on this island. I'm stranded on the beach somewhere. I'm assuming it's an island, because if I'm just stranded on, like, Myrtle Beach, that's not really being stranded. Like, I could get my way out of Myrtle Beach. Just follow the crackheads. But, I'm assuming by stranded on a beach, you mean, like, on an island somewhere. That's what I'm assuming. And if that's the case, and I couldn't, like, escape my way back into civil society, here's how this would play out. I would probably find a place to sit down, and I would sit there until I no longer am breathing. Because that's about as much hope that I would be helpful in that situation. Like, hey, I'm stranded. I guess I'm going to die. Let's make that happen quick as possible, right? That's a joke. No need to send the hospital. I'm fine. There's no depression here. If you hear the news that I whacked myself, I did not actually do it. The government did. Anyway, I don't think I have an answer for this question. It's a good question, and it's one that I think most people have that immediate answer that they could think through. The problem with me is I just don't value music. And when I say it, like I love music, I listen to it all the time, right? But I don't. A lot of people have placed value on music in terms of, well, this is my favorite song, this is my favorite album, this, right? And for me, I just want to. I listen to music for different reasons than a lot of people. A lot of people, place like emotional weight on music, like and you'll see it in their names of their playlist, where it's like, you know, these are our sexy time songs, or these are songs when I'm sad, right? And they get a clever little title, or songs when I'm feeling happy or something like that, right? My playlist titles, I'm not even kidding, I got like 3 playlists that I have made. I have, quite literally, it's named Rap Music. It's literally the name. And there's 3 artists that I listen to in the rap genre. You probably have never heard of them. Samson, Tom McDonald, and Dax. And there might be another artist. But it's essentially just all my Tom McDonald put together into one playlist. That way I don't have to, you know, scroll between albums and stuff like that, right? I have 2 country playlists. One literally titled Country, and it's my larger country playlist that has all my country music that I like. And then I have sort of a sub-playlist that's sort of like what I call making country country again, where it's, you know, old school sound that I like, this old Texas, you know, George Strait type country, but it's not, there's no George Strait in here. It's newer artists who are bringing that sound back. So Randall King, my favorite artist, is in there. Jake Worthington, Bryce Leatherwood, a band named Midland. And so, you know what? I just scrolled and I saw this song, and now I'm sitting here. You know what? It'll be this song right here. This song right here, Kiss Goodbye All Night by Drake Mulligan. I think I could listen to this song over and over again for the rest of my life. Eventually, I would yeet the magic box into the ocean and till it no longer plays. But I think I could go long enough with this song. I love this song. So we'll go with that. Kiss Goodbye All Night by Drake Mulligan. All right. Next question. B-Master asks, does time warrant a pay raise, or do you think it should be based off performance? Do you think tenure alone is enough to get a raise, or should other things play a part in it? This is talking more so about the Jasmine Nick situation. Apparently, she turned down like 100, or she thought she deserved like $100,000 or more a year because she was on TV for 3 years. And so essentially the question is does in this business in wrestling, because I'm only going to consider it in wrestling, because I think it's different. I think my answer differs. So for me, in normal business situation for a retail employee or something, I do think performance matters more than tenure. But I think tenure matters more in retail than it does, in an industry like wrestling or the arts. Ultimately, how you perform should be the only measurement for raises and promotions. It's how you perform. Companies should want the best person at the top of their company, right? It should 100% be a merit-based job market. Meaning, when I'm hiring for an employee, I want the best employee. I don't care how long. I don't care if you've done 12 years in the industry. If you were 12 years in the industry and performed below industry standards for all 12 years, I don't want you as my employee. I will rather take the guy who's 3 years in but has far out exceeded industry standards in the industry you're in. Right? I definitely, personally, to me, I believe performance is the most important factor when it comes to things like raises and promotions. As someone who has been passed over a lot in my career, whether it's in management and fast food or in my current profession, been passed over, when I performed better than the person who performed, but they were promoted because of, you know, oh, well, they have more experience. Okay, well, how good was their experience? It would be my question. Like, how useful is 30 years experience if you were not necessarily the best manager, if you didn't perform up to industry standards for your whole tenure in that experience, right? Because if I let's say I work a job and I have 30 years in construction, but every single building that I build has a leak in it and collapses within 6 months of me building it, would you hire me to build your house? Probably not. Right? Performance is the most important factor in the job market. Especially when you believe, like I do, that there should be very little regulation on the job market and it should be free. And the only way you should be able to measure, because that's the only way to measure that's fair, right? That's the only way to measure someone fairly is through their performance, especially in pro wrestling. Now, performance in wrestling doesn't mean wins and losses. Performance means we gave you a job, we gave you a role, how well are you doing that role? We told you to be the bad guy who make the crowd hates, but you don't have any heat, and you're not necessarily the best in the ring, and this newbie who's only been wrestling for 3 months, well, she can go out there, and I'm just giving a false example. You know, I'm making this up, right? So let's say I've been in the business for 12 years, but I can't draw shit. And then some new guy comes in, and he's been in the business for 12 months, and but he can draw. He has charisma. He's really good in the ring. The fans love him. He gets a reaction based on his role. So if he plays a heel, he gets it booed. If he plays the babyface, he gets cheered. But he's only been in the business for 1/12 of the amount of time I have. I can't be upset, though, when he gets more money than me, because he draws more money than me. Right? It's all about performance in this industry. So, yes, Jasmine Nix has nothing to complain about. I don't care how long you were on TV for. You weren't necessarily all that good at what you did. You looked attractive. Let's just be honest. That's simply why you were on TV for 3 years. Because you're attractive looking. But you really added nothing to the product. You could easily throw in Lainey Reed like they did, and she looks just as good as you did. Right? So I would say performance is the better standard. Now, tenure is important. You want to, if there's a person who's been in the industry for 20 years and he's trying to work his way up and he performs to industry standard, no one's expecting you to, you know, outperform everyone. There are some people who are just better. I think when it comes to something like raises, sure, tenure should have a small role in it. Hey, you've been loyal to our company for X amount of time. Well, right? But I think where that becomes dangerous is, oh, I've been here for 30 years. I deserve a raise. Okay, well, you've added zero value to our company. You're just barely meeting standard. You're not adding anything to the company. Why should I reward you for 30 years of mediocrity, you know, in that example, right? And so, yeah. I mean, tenure definitely has a role. Performance is way more of an important role to me. If I was a business owner, right? If I was a business owner and Kara and B-Master both worked for me and Kara was the better employee, right? Kara's getting the bigger raise because she adds more, right? That's just how I would work. And it has nothing to do with favoritism. It would solely be based on performance, and everyone would know, hey, performance reviews are strictly that, performance-based. How you perform, how much value you add to my business. And that is strictly how I would give your raises. That's the only way you can do it. That's the only way that's fair, in my opinion. And then the last question that we're going to get to here. With this week being Halloween week, Halloween is on Friday. Kara, now she wrote an essay when she gave this question, which is, She wrote an essay when she gave this question, which isn't a bad thing. I enjoyed reading it. Sorry, I'm replying to some New England Patriots hate in the Discord. That's not allowed. Anyway, I want to go back and read the question. I'm not going to read the whole essay, because she gave a lot of explanation, but I want to make sure I read the question as she wrote it. Okay, this will be one question for Week Too Deep this week. following the Halloween theme. There's three types of Christians during this type of year: the pro-Halloween, the neutral Halloween, the anti-Halloween. The question for you is, where do you lie way too deep when it comes to Halloween? And what have you been taught about it? And then she gives explanations for the different views on. And she actually gave a very good explanation of each of the different camps. I would just label them a little bit. I wouldn't label them pro-Halloween, anti-Halloween, neutral Halloween. I would say rather that there are three groups still. You have those that believe you can receive Halloween. Those would be the pro-Halloween people who say that you can receive Halloween. That there are the neutral ones, I would say, are those that you can redeem Halloween. That means turn it from what they would claim are pagan roots and redeem it. And then you would have those that the anti-Halloweeners, which is, y'all going to clip that. Kara's going to clip that. I know my fan base. Welcome to Slap and Meat, where we talk about Halloweeners. those who are anti-Halloween, I would typically be what I would say, those that say you have to rebuke it. So you can either receive, redeem, or rebuke is essentially what Kara is saying. Now, here's why I say those people will say Halloween has pagan roots. And what I'm going to do, because B-Master follows up and says, well, that's a great question, now, but what about Christmas and Easter as well? So I want to talk about all three, because I'm going to make a strong statement that I don't think most people in today's culture have ever been taught. Halloween, Christmas, and Easter did not start as pagan holidays. In fact, Halloween, we'll start with that first. Halloween is 100% a Catholic holiday. The name itself, Hallow Eve, is essentially what it is, Hallow's Eve. So Hallow meaning holy. So it's All Hallows Eve, the night before All Hallows Day or All Saints Day. It's which is the day where you venerate and worship the saints who have gone before you in death. The day after All Saints Day, the 2nd of November, is All Souls Day. Right, so it's all 100% Catholic in origin. Excuse me. Which I kind of knew it. But at the same time, like, even I sort of got drawn into, well, no, Halloween's probably pagan. I kind of bought that lie. There's a lie, and I'm going to tell you where that lie came from here in a second. But the name Halloween actually comes from hollow, which means one who is holy or a saint, right? So hallowed be thy name, right? In the Lord's Prayer, our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, right? And then the Scottish way of saying eve or evening is een. So it's Halloween, right? And so that's where we get Halloween from. It's the evening before All Hallows Day. So All Saints Day was formally instituted in 609 AD when he consecrated the Pantheon in Rome to Saint Mary and all the martyrs. Essentially Christianizing that pagan temple, right? Later in 835, Pope Gregory then moved the feast of All Saints Day to November 1st to not 100% certain why, but it's believed it's possibly to align with existing festivals in Northern Europe, right? But the festival is Catholic, right? And so if All Saints Day is November 1st, that means All Hallows Eve or Halloween is October 31st, right? So where does the concept of something like, I mentioned All Souls Day because the concept of trick-or-treating actually comes from All Souls Day. While All Saints Day, November 1st, celebrated those already in heaven. Again, we're talking about Catholics here. So I'll push this out here. I believe that there's a difference in Catholic belief and Christian Protestant belief. They are two separate churches with two separate belief systems. A lot of people love to say, well, I'm Christian, but who practices Catholicism. Catholics and Christians are two separate groups. Similar beliefs, but vastly different in areas, right? So I make that because I'm not Catholic. I am Protestant. And so I don't necessarily believe in this whole idea of venerating and remembering the saints, right? Not against it, but I also think it's something that, you know, it's not my background to do this, right? So All Saints Day celebrated those who are in heaven. All Souls Day was for remembering and praying for all of the faithful who had departed. It was essentially a day of hope in the resurrection that is to come when the Messiah returned, when Jesus returns. And it's also a day to reflect on our own mortality. So within that, there grew a tradition known as souling. In medieval England and Ireland, poor Christians would go door to door offering prayers for the souls of the dead in exchange for quote unquote soul cakes. Small little cakes, right? They were poor, so they would say, hey, if you gave us a soul cake, we'll pray for the souls of your loved ones. Again, because the Catholics believe that you can intercede for those who had passed away while they are in purgatory, right? Again, not a belief I'm 100% supportive of. In fact, I would vastly rebuke that belief. But that is the origin of what we would later know as trick-or-treating, because with that, children later took up the custom ringing bells, reciting rhymes, asking for treats, and in return, right, so they would do tricks and would then get treats in return. That's where trick or treat comes from. So then the question then becomes, well, what about the Celts, the Celtics, the Celtics? What about Samhain? I don't know how to pronounce it correctly in Gaelic. Samhain. I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's the notion. So there's a notion that Christians took Samhain and Christianized it or baptized it from a pagan holiday to a Christian holiday, and that is not at all true. Here are some things we know about this. The Celtic people, the Druids, which were sort of their prophets, they didn't write anything down. For the most part, everything was oral tradition for the Celts. And so we actually don't know how they celebrated Samhain. I don't know how to pronounce it. We're just going to say Samhain because that's how it's spelled. And if it's wrong, it's wrong. My Scottish ancestors will be vastly disappointed, as will Lyra Valkyria, but that is okay. Here is sort of the nuance in this idea here. The Celtic Samhain, we don't really know how they celebrate it. A lot of it is fan fiction at this point because there isn't much written down. But what we do know is the church did not adopt the religion or the practice of Samhain. They replaced it. They replaced it with Halloween. They switched the focus on from, you know, worshiping pagan idols to focusing on the saints and eternal life. Right? And so there was a focus rather from death to resurrection hope, right? So, and again, just because the two holidays sit on the same day doesn't mean that, oh, well, the Christians just took a holiday and baptized it to Christian. No. Right? But so then we get historically to the Protestant Reformation. So Kara asked him the question, what have I been taught about Halloween? So personally, for me, I don't necessarily care about the holiday. Again, I'm not Catholic, so I don't celebrate All Hallows Eve. I don't celebrate Saints Day. I don't celebrate All Souls Day. So, right, but what happened, Martin Luther, who nailed the 95 Theses to the church door in Wittenberg, he actually chose Halloween 1517, so October 31st, 1517, on purpose, because it was a major feast day and there would be a lot of people coming to church. And he wanted to make a major sound when he did this. Right? And so that gave birth, October 31st, 1517, as the Protestant Reformation sort of grew and took shape later down the line. That was the birthday of the Protestant denominations, the Protestant Reformation, which is what I celebrate on October 31st. It's Reformation Day. And there's not a lot of actual celebration done. It's just, I'm not going to say Happy Halloween. I'm going to say Happy Reformation Day to the people that I talk to, right? As the Protestants, though, sort of distance themselves from the Catholics and the remembrance of the dead, which is what Halloween and all of that represented, was praying and remembering the dead. The immigrants from Ireland and Scotland, they brought some of the folk customs to America. So pumpkins actually have American origin. They didn't start in Scotland or Ireland. They actually used turnips in Scotland or Ireland, and pumpkins replaced them when they came here. And by the late 1800s, Halloween was essentially just a community-centered festival of autumn, right? Hey, we're just going to have like a potluck to celebrate autumn, essentially, right? There was no pagan ritual here either. So where does this... one more thing. Hallows Eve, All Hallows Eve, wearing masks and stuff like that, they dressed up in costumes and they were doing what the pagans did. No. We were mocking death. That it's the tradition that would happen when in war, really, throughout ancient times, was you would come back victorious from a war. And you would sort of celebrate by dressing up as the people you defeated and sort of mocking them. And so Christians were in the medieval times, they would dress up as skeletons or demons. This is actually where the current caricature that's popular of what Satan looks like as the red goat-like figure with the tail and the scepter, right? That's where this comes from. But it was 100% to say, to mock death and darkness and demons. It was 100%. I tell you, I believe in a ministry of mocking, right? I support this, right? Essentially, it was a night that reminded believers of their own mortality and the reality of the spiritual world, and that there was eternal hope in Christ, right? So why is there now a secular swing and shift back towards, honestly, paganism? And so this is where I think it gets nuanced, in my view, on Halloween. The question is, should we celebrate? And my question is, well, what are you celebrating? Are you dressing up, walking around your neighborhood, getting candy, and you're dressed up as like a cowboy or something like that? I ain't got no problem with that. I really don't. I have no issue at all with that. Halloween's actually one of the very few holy days on the calendar that is still communal, where you can, like, how many of you know your next door neighbor, right? Halloween still gives you that opportunity to interact with the community. And so as a Christian, I'm all for that, because I think that I think good conversations can happen because of that. In fact, I know people who would hand out candy in little bags. They would have pre-made bags of candy that they would hand out, and inside of them would be like little, well, we in Christendom, we call them tracts. Like the little cards that people hand out that have, like, you know, different Bible verses or something on it, trying to convince you to, right, you know, consider being a Christian. And so I know people who pass those out in these little baggies. And so I think it's a very good opportunity to meet the community and to have fun and enjoy life. However, if by celebrate you mean participate in witchcraft or, you know, there's a darkness that is starting to come into our culture and our society really around the 80s. And there's actually the darkness of Halloween and its popularity came because I was doing some research on this. It came because of the sexual revolution in the 1960s. So in the 1960s, the hippie movement started, and there was like a sexual revolution where, like, men and women alone, like all together, really wanted, they really started to express their sexuality, and that's where, like, hookup culture really began. And so in a response to that, in the 80s, they started making, you know, if you notice some of these movies, like, you know, Jason and all of that, where there would be a scene, and the popular scene was, like, the prom queen and the jock, star football player, you know, getting it on in the backseat of a car, and that's where they would get whacked. And it was 100% in response to try to scare teenagers in the 80s from being sexually promiscuous. That's where the popularity of the horror slasher genre came from. But now we have this sort of just, I do believe our culture has shifted and has become darker, has become more pagan. And I do think in modern Halloween, there is a darkness that surrounds it. I mean, places like Party City and Spirit Halloween are selling Ouija boards now. So if that's what you mean by celebrate, then I would 100% say you got to be discerning and you got to rebuke those deeds of evil. But I don't think that means we throw the whole religion out, or the whole holiday out, because Halloween is by nature, by design, a Catholic holiday. It had, you know, biblical ideas behind it. That moves us to, you know, just quickly, Christmas, right? Because you ask about Christmas, right? Christmas actually wasn't celebrated. The birth of Jesus wasn't celebrated until the 4th century. Mainly because the early church was really focused on the event that most of them either saw or knew someone who saw, which was the resurrection. And so the apostles preached a risen Christ, not a baby in a manger. But as the church grew, so did its desire to honor the what is known as the Immaculate Conception or the Incarnation, the coming of God, incarnation being God becoming man. And so in the 4th century, Christians marked December 25th as the feast of the birth of Christ. And so there's a lot of people, if you watch the movie like Zeitgeist or any atheist who talks on this topic, they borrowed the date from pagans. But here's the problem. Jesus, we know, and most Christians will tell you this if they're smart and understand history, Jesus wasn't born on December 25th. It was just chosen as the feast day, and we're going to tell you why. So yes, it is true that the Romans celebrated the birthday of the unconquered sun, or Dies Natalis Solis Evicti, as it is in Latin, was celebrated on December 25th. It was a pagan holiday to rejoice after after the winter solstice as light began to return to the earth. But the church didn't so much borrow the date as they did sort of baptizing the date. They saw that the Romans already had this feast day that was about the unconquered sun rising, and they took the verse John 1:9, which says the true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. So rather than celebrating the rebirth of the sun, S-U-N, Christians then began to worship and rejoice and celebrate the birth of the Son, S-O-N, being Jesus. Saint Augustine of Hippo later put it, he chose to be born on the day that the sun began to wax, that he might declare himself the light of the world. Now, there were some people who definitely believed that Jesus was born in December. I think we have a lot more information to say that that's highly unlikely. I think the biblical narrative itself makes it highly unlikely in that there were shepherds in the field and you could see the stars. You typically can't have both of those in winter, especially the shepherds in the fields. During the night, during winter, when it would be cold. But that's a whole different conversation, right? So by the 5th century, essentially, Christmas was Christian, right? It was part of the Christian tradition. Through medieval Europe, there was, rich symbolism like the evergreen trees, Christmas trees, candles for being the divine light. Gift giving, the idea of giving gifts on Christmas came from the Christian belief of the Magi who came to visit Christ and gave him gifts, and then ultimately to represent the greatest gift ever given, which is God giving his own son. The Christmas tree has some pre-Christian roots, but Christians changed the symbol to represent the tree of life, and symbolize the cross where the light of salvation would one day shine. Again, we get to the Protestant Reformation where, I'll be honest, The reformers, the people that I sort of look up to in my Christian belief, they were divided. So Martin Luther said, sure, keep it, celebrate it. Whereas the Puritans said, they banned it. They called it popish, too riotous, and that the parties were too rowdy. You got to understand the Puritans, though. Right? Yet, even in its most secular forms, Christmas never lost the central heartbeat, which is that God came to earth to be with man, or the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And so, again, Christmas is not pagan. Halloween is not pagan in nature. And then we can get to Easter, where Christmas sort of starts the season in prelude, and Easter is sort of the crescendo, the day the church shouts its defiance against death. And then we could say Halloween sort of ends it, where we mock it. Easter is the oldest Christian religion feast, predating Christmas by centuries. The apostles themselves observed it, not as Easter, but as the annual remembrance of the resurrection of Christ following the Passover. The word Easter comes from the word Eostre, I think it's how it's pronounced, the Anglo-Saxon spring festival. But the feast itself was never pagan in origin. In most languages, it's actually called Pascha, from the Hebrew Pesach, meaning Passover, because Jesus' death fulfilled the Exodus story, right? And so Easter is literally the celebration of Passover. So the early church didn't think of Easter as a one-day event. It was a season, which is where Good Friday came from, Holy Saturday, Easter Sunday, right? So Good Friday was the crucifixion. Holy Saturday was the silence in the tomb, Sabbath rest, right? And then on Sunday was the resurrection. So it was a season of days, right? And that's why Christians typically celebrate the Easter season. By the second century, most churches were already holding feasts tied to the Jewish calendar. There were disagreements about whether to celebrate it on the day of Passover every year or on the nearest Sunday, but all agree it was essential to the Christian faith. In fact, I would also argue with them that the resurrection is the single event in which the entire religion is cruxed upon. Here's why. If you can disprove the resurrection of Jesus, that, right, the rest of the religion means absolutely nothing. It all is cruxed upon the fact that this guy died, was buried, claimed to be God, rose himself, raised from the dead, right? If you can disprove that, you disprove the entire religion, right? And so what about the symbolism, right? Easter bunny, the eggs, right? Came drawn from many European folk traditions celebrating spring and new life. Again, it wasn't that the church created, but more so reinterpreted the symbols. So what began as seasonal folklore got folded into the celebration and joy of celebrating the resurrection, a kind of visual sermon that life burst forth where death once ruled. Unlike Christmas, Easter survived universally through the Reformation. The three big leaders of the Reformation, John Calvin, Martin Luther, and I don't know Swingley's first name, is not coming to my brain, but Swingley, they all held it as central, though the Reformed tradition prefers simplicity over spectacle, right? Many Puritans have, you know, they stripped away the pageantry, but again, the central truth of Easter is that Christ is risen in the resurrection, right? John Calvin actually wrote, "The whole of our faith is tied to the resurrection of Christ," right? All of these, why do we view all of these, and I wanted to save this to the end, why do we view all of these as pagan holidays? Well, the church has sort of stepped back and given the culture away to the pagans. And so whoever has control controls the narrative. And I don't think Satan wants to be mocked. And so if he can convince you to believe that Halloween is not the day that Christians mock his defeat, then I think he's all for it. I also think it shows how just deeply depraved the human heart is. We desire, the fact that horror movies and slasher movies are uber popular just never makes sense to me. I hate that genre. It's my least favorite genre of movie. I absolutely despise it. I find thrillers and gasher, what are they called, slasher films, I find those to be absolutely gross depictions of I don't find it entertaining at all. But I think there's also sort of a self, as people are, so here's what I've noticed, right? Philosophically, you have three choices, right? You are a nihilist or an atheist, same thing, right? You're a nihilist. B, you're a pagan, or right? You're a pagan theist, right? Meaning you believe in gods or goddesses that are not of the Christian faith, or you're a Christian. Those are your three options. And what we could really label it down to why I believe paganism or New Ageism is sort of soaring and really becoming popular is atheism is sort of dying out. A lot of people, especially in the younger generations, are recognizing that the fruits of atheism is very hopeless. You know, I talked about in several episodes, the last two, I think, the worldview of you're either a deist or an atheist, or a theist or an atheist. And the atheist worldview literally is a worldview that says you came from nothing, you are nothing, and you will always be nothing, and you have no purpose. And I think a lot of people are recognizing the fruits of nihilism and atheism, and there's no hope there, and so they're turning to a spirituality or a theism, but it's not a Christian theism, and so they're turning to New Age, pagan, Norse mythology, type, you know, crystals and Ouija boards and witchcraft, and they're turning to that because there's a structure there. It's still wrong. It's still pagan, but they crave again. I think there's something that everybody inside of them craves, and there's a, you know, we in the Christian worldview we like to joke around it, and how we sort of witness to people say, well, you guys have a God-sized hole in your heart that you try to fill with other things. And that's what I believe New Age and paganism, it's there's a self-fulfilling prophecy here that, you know, my nihilism isn't leading me anywhere. It isn't taking me anywhere. And it's really the fruits of nihilism and atheism is hopeless. But I also, a lot of them don't also believe in organized religion. And so the fruits of that, because Christians have sort of stepped away from the culture and have allowed essentially pagans to take back control of the culture, the things of the culture are going to become pagan. And let's just be honest, the darkness sells. In the same way that sex sells, darkness sells, depravity sells, slasher films sell. So everyone dress up as Freddy or Jason, or what's the new one now, the little clown, Art, is it Art the Clown or something like that? That's everyone wants to dress up as, you know, And so that's ultimately where I believe. Ultimately, my answer to the question, though, after all that history and nerdiness, I'm sorry for being nerdy again. Ultimately, my answer is this. I recognize the Christian origins of all three religions. I personally am not a big fan. So I'm not like a Jehovah's Witness that will say no celebration of anything. Jehovah's Witnesses don't celebrate holidays. They don't celebrate birthdays. None of that, right? I'm not that. But I'm also not one of those that are like, well, sure, but let's have a weekly gathering and celebrate by watching, horror movies or whatever. Like, I think we got to be discerning in what we allow in. And so I think there are barriers. I think if you get together with your church or with friends and or whatever, and you celebrate just having a good time, and you get some candy, you dress up as a cowboy or something like that, right? I'm all fine with it. I definitely would say it's acceptable. However, our culture is getting more scandalous, and so I don't like Halloween personally because the costumes are becoming deeply occultic and deeply, for the women, it's okay to dress as a slut on Halloween, right? There's no, but I guess it's okay in our culture now because OnlyFans is allowed, right? So we'll start in with the rant against that. But yeah, I think you got to be discerning. It depends on what you're celebrating. If you're just celebrating going around getting some candy and having a good time, that's cool. As long as that good time doesn't involve occultic practices and Ouija boards and gory slasher films, you know what? I'm all fine with it. I really am. I don't think it's one of those things that, we should separate over, right? And so, yeah, that's where I'm at. I'm not one of those that are like, you can never celebrate it or you're going to hell. I don't think that's useful at all. And so I hope my history lesson taught you guys something. But that's where we'll end this episode. I'm Way Too Deep. Thank you all for listening. And until next time, I will see you on the next episode of the Slapping Meat Community Show. So hit that and subscribe, come along for the